Okay, we would like to thank everyone for coming once again. And again, we're starting on time to reward those who have come on time. I don't know which number sure we're up to in this series of Kashrus concepts, but we are starting a new topic. And that is Hechsher Kelim. Hechsher Kelim. As the words imply, Hechsher means to make kosher, to make a vessel kosher. Now, as we discussed in the last sessions, we always like to go back to whatever the source is, wherever the halacha may be. So if you recall, by Tefilas Kelim, we saw that the source for Tefilas Kelim, that we have to immerse a vessel before we use it, is sourced in one word in the Torah, by the army coming back with the spoils from the war in Midian. But what's interesting, which I pointed out at that time, was that word is positioned inside the discussion of how a vessel that was acquired or taken from people of Midian who are not Jewish, how that vessel, which is not kosher, how do you make it kosher? So we have the mitzvah, in other words, of immersing a vessel, tefilas kelim, mixed together, or there, juxtapositioned together with how you take that vessel and make it kosher. As I discussed when we began our discussion on tefilas kelim, with a vessel that was brought back from the spoils of Midian, there are three potential problems. One is that it's tamei. One is that it's not kosher. The third is that it wasn't toveled. So in the last topic, we discussed about what do you do about tefilas kelim. What is that mitzvah? What is the situation with the mitzvah, tefilas kelim, and so on and so forth. Now, obviously, the next thing to go into, even though we said that if you have a vessel that you got from a goy, you have to kasher it first and then tovel it. But still, now that we've covered tefilas kelim, the next thing we're going to talk about is how you kasher a kli. How you make a kli kasher. So once again, we have to go back to the source. So one of the sources for Hechsher Kelim, how and what's the process of making a kli that was not kosher into kosher, is what we mentioned before, the war from Midian, the spoils from the war of Midian. So if you recall, those psukim, as we learned them last time, or whenever it was, like 3 weeks ago, when we were discussing the psukim about Tefilas Kelim, so remember, there was Elazar speaks to the army and says some interesting words. First, he says gold, silver, and rattles off all these metallic compounds. And then he goes on to say, anything that is brought through water should be brought through water. And he goes on a little more. Anything that cannot be brought through water should be brought through fire. And just to summarize the psukim. Now, that's very difficult. What is he talking about? What does he mean by that? What does psukim mean? Anything that's brought through water is brought through water. Anything that's brought through fire, not brought through water, should probably be fire. What does that mean? Now, in addition to that, we also have psukim parshas Sav, perek in Vayikra perek Vav pasuk Yud Aleph, where the Torah, Sukkot I think was there Saturday night. I referred to this pasuk Saturday night at the Leil Torah Shir, that there was a very interesting thing that happened in the Beis HaMikdash quite often. And that was that if someone brought a Korban Chatas, a sin offering, for doing something that's a Kares Bishogig, accidentally, person did something that's a Kares offense accidentally. They didn't realize something was Chametz and they ate it on Pesach. So we would say, oh, that's an accident. You know, you didn't realize. So in Torah terms, that's not true. You did something that's a kares. Okay, it wasn't intentional, but still. So you had to bring a korban chatas to the Beis HaMikdash. So part of the korban chatas is eaten by the kohanim. I don't know, you don't eat raw meat. Sushi may be in, but meat isn't. So the kohanim had to cook the meat. So the Torah says, the problem is, what do you do with the pot? What do you do with the pot that the carbon chatas was cooked in. So the Torah says, well, there's two possibilities. Kli cheres asher tevushal vol yishaver. That if they used a ceramic pot, so then it has to be broken. Ve'im b'kli nechoshes bushala, but if the carbon chatas was cooked in a kli nechoshes in a bronze copper pot, marak v'shutaf b'mayim, so it should be washed and scorched in water. What's that? What does that mean? What's going on there? What's going on there? So from this pasuk by Korban Chatos, together with the psukim that we learned before from the vessels of Midian, we get a complete picture of how we take a pot and how do we make it kosher. Basically, the idea is, and we touched upon this before when we were talking about carne leche, and Mrs. Kronbach showed us very graphically that there is two things, and I wrote them on the blackboard, whiteboard before. There is two things. There's be'en, like from the word ayin, something you could see. So let's say you have a pot and there's pig on it. So that is be'en. That's something you could see. That's tangible. That is not such a big problem because we can wash it away. How we wash, we have to make sure we get all the residue off. Okay, we can work that out somehow. But in addition to that, the Torah is telling us here by the Korban Chatos that there's something else. There is what we call belia. I wrote that on the whiteboard last time. Belia, there is absorption. There's something absorbed inside. And as Mrs. Kronbach showed us, there could be grape juice that's absorbed inside something, inside a vessel. There could be coffee. There could be chatos juice. There could be pig from Mr. and Mrs. Midian. They used it yesterday at their Super Bowl party, right? So there's all these things, all this absorption that's inside. So now, again, we're going to come back to these concepts over and over again. There's a very important concept to bear in mind, that there's be'en, is what we see, and there's what we don't see. There's something that's absorbed inside. Sometimes I say this is like a metaphor for life, because there's the physical, and there's the neshama that you don't see. So too with pots and pans, not to compare. There's what you see, and there's what you don't see. Now, when we're talking about a vessel that's not kosher, and we want to use it for kosher, we have to attack those two areas. We have to attack those two areas. We have to take care of what we see, and we also have to take care of what we don't see, what's absorbed inside, unless Mrs. Kronbach puts it in the kiln for a while and then you could actually see it. But again, usually we don't see the absorption that's inside. Now again, let's take this concept a little further. What's the problem? Well, if you have something that you can actually see, let's say you have pig glop on something, then the problem is obvious. And that is, if I use this utensil in conjunction with my kosher food, so that physical pig glop will get into my, let's say it's a pot, and the pot I brought back from Midian, and I didn't clean it properly, and then I make chicken soup in there, so obviously the pig will get into my chicken soup, okay? But let's say I clean it off very well, and I wash off, I use scouring pads, and I use all sorts of things, and I clean it off very well. So then what's the problem if I cook chicken soup in it? There's still a problem, because this is exactly what the Torah is telling us by Korban Chatos and also by the vessels of Midian, that there's absorption inside. So what's going to happen? Very simple. What's going to happen is when I cook, and we discuss this when we talk about carne leche, but here it comes back again. When I cook my chicken soup in this pot, even though it's a clean pot, the pig absorption that's inside, that's absorbed, the taste that's absorbed inside the walls of the pot, when the pot is heated up with the chicken soup, that heat is going to cause that absorption to come out, as Mrs. Kronbach showed us. And now what? Where is that absorption going to go? It's going to go into Never Never Land? No. It's going to go into my chicken soup. So that pig that is inside the pot is now going to go where? inside of my chicken soup. So my chicken soup has now pig in it. Now again, I'm just using pig as an example. It could be anything else, or it could be stuff we discussed before. It could be wine, non-kosher wine. It could be milchik into fleishik, or fleishik into milchik. It could be kosher, pig into kosher, whatever it may be, right? Whatever issue you want to come up with, that is the concept. The concept is there's what we could see, but there's also absorption that we can't see, and that absorption goes somewhere. It goes somewhere. Now again, we'll discuss this concept more and in more detail as we go through, but now with this topic, as soon as we're finished, you're going to see a lot of the ideas that we discussed with carne leche, that we milk and conflation, that we discussed with tefillas, that we discuss will all come together. You'll see how. Okay, yeah.
You know, I heard that 160th rule.
Okay, well, you're way ahead of us. Don't go there yet.
All right.
Don't go there yet. Okay, so that's the concept. The concept is that we have to not only get what we can see, the be'en, away from potentially coming into contact with food, but we also have to get what's absorbed also away from my food. Out of the pot, out of the fork, out of the knife, whatever it may be. So how do we do that? So there's basically two areas we have to consider when we're talking about a fork, a pot, any kli that is not kosher, and I want to make it kosher. There's two things we're going to have to focus on to determine how and under what circumstances could this kli become kosher. The first area, the first point is, what is the vessel made out of? What's the material that's made out of? Now, remember when Elazar was talking to the army? What did he do? He rattled off all these things that are metal. Zahav, Kesef, Nechoshes, Bedil, Ofares, Barzel, all those things that he, all those materials he mentioned were, had something in common. They were all metals. They were all metals. So the first thing we look at is that the Torah is telling us certain materials, certain kalim, material-wise, can be kashered, and some can't. Certain materials cannot be kashered. So, for example, Elazar comes and says, hey guys, he didn't say hey guys, but he said gold, silver, right? He rattled off all those metals, and he said those could be koshered. How? We'll discuss that. That will be the second part. Anything that could be brought through water is brought through water, anything not through fire. Okay? So one end of the spectrum is Elazar was telling the army very clearly that stuff you bring back from Midian, if it's made out of metal, you could kosher it. How? We're not there yet. We're not there yet. So the first question point is, if something's made out of metal, so then it could potentially be kosher. On the other end of the spectrum, of our material spectrum, is ceramic. Ceramic cannot be kosher. How do you know? Answer is, our second source was the vessels of the Korban Chatos. Remember, the Torah said there's two possible pots, material of pots that were used for cooking the Korban Chatos. One was bronze. We'll take the second one first. Bronze, copper, again a metal. So what do? You scorch it and you bring it, use water on it. We'll explain what that is later. What's the other possibility? Ceramic, cheres. Ceramic is cheres. And when we refer to ceramic or cheres, that's what we call porcelain or enamel or china. All those type of things are cheres. So what do if you have a Korban Chatos pot? So now this pot, it might have residue, physical residue of Korban Chatos, but it definitely has absorption of Korban Chatos, and I have to get rid of that. How do I get rid of that? How do I dispose of it? How do I take care of it? So what did the Torah say? You have to break it. Meaning that I can't kosher it. You just break it and it's destroyed. So those are the sources from the Torah for those two ends of the spectrum. The Torah tells us very clearly that anything that's made out of a metal-like material could be kosher. Elazar said that. And in Korban Chatos, we see the other end of the spectrum, that anything that's made out of a cheres material can't do anything with it. Has to be broken. Okay?
When I put in a kiln.
That's only in extreme cases. Yeah, and you're way in front of it. Let's not talk about the exception. We're just talking about the general categories. Okay? So those are the two ends of the spectrum. Now, obviously, we have a lot of other things. Well, let's go to the middle. How about what we left out is a major material. That is glass. Could you kasher glass? Right? So we have metal. Definitely could kasher. We have cheres, which you can't kasher. How about something in the middle? How about glass? So could glass is not mentioned in the Torah. So could you kasher it? So that's a machlokas. This is a famous machlokas that's brought down in many places, especially by Hilchos Pesach. And there's a big machlokas about that. Some say that you can't kasher glass. Because glass, after all, its beginnings is ground, dirt. So some say it's more like cheres and you can't kasher it. Some say just the opposite. This, again, brought down in Hilchos Pesach and many other places also. And that is that some say that glass is a super material, meaning that it's smooth, and therefore it doesn't even absorb. You don't even have to kasher it. That's why in the old days, not that long ago, it used to be that some people used to use glass for milchig and fleishig, because that's what, and maybe some people even do that today, because, use it interchangeably, because they held like that lenient opinion that glass is a super material, that it does not absorb. So what do? You obviously have to wash it off if you want to use it for milk or for fleishig. But as far as absorption is concerned, it doesn't absorb. Now, there's a lot of people, this is an opinion that usually today, I mean, you can see in the old days people used to do it, but in general, the Rama and others say you shouldn't rely upon this opinion if glass is plentiful. So like I used to say in Beis Yaakov, now go to a 99-cent store and you get for 99 cents, 99 glasses, 99 days of the week. So, you know, so in general, we don't like going this way. But then some say, no, you could kasher it. Glass could be kashered. And how would you kasher it? Well, that's a whole difference of opinion. You might have heard of the famous Irui Umiloi Gimel Pamim, which means that what you do is you take the glass, and assuming the glass is clean, and you submerge it in a pool of water. It doesn't have to be a pool, in a thing of water, and you leave it there for 24 hours, and take it out, change the water, put it back in for 24 more hours, then you take it out after 24 hours, dump it out, get new water, put it in for a third period of 24 hours. In other words, 72 hours altogether, but broken up, right? In other words, broken up means you change the water each time. And some people, the Rama brings this out, say that that's okay. That kashers it. In fact, some people even do this for Pesach. Kasher glass, crystal for Pesach. This way. Some people say, no, that's not good enough. Glass needs hagolo, which we'll get to later. Boiling hot water. We'll talk about that later. But that is a very big machlokas about could you, under what circumstances, could you kasher glass? Some people have a middle track. They'll kasher it for during the year, but they won't kasher it for Pesach. You know, we have different opinions, and again, a lot of times it depends on the situation. Another very important idea when we're talking about materials is a very important consideration in halacha besides the material. In other words, if it's cheres, if it's a cheres type of material, or if it's metal, or if it's glass. Another consideration that a Rav has to bear in mind is how fragile is whatever it is you're kashering. Because it could be, it's metal. It could be something you could kasher. Or even if you go according to Liam opinions with glass, you could kasher glass. But if we're scared that because the vessel is fragile, whatever it may be, so then a Rav has a prerogative to say, you can't kasher that. Even though it's a material that maybe you could kasher, or maybe even though there's opinions that say you could kasher it, but still, sometimes the Rav has the prerogative to say you can't kasher that because we're scared you won't kasher it well, because it's fragile. So we're scared you won't do a good job on it because you're scared it will break. Also, sometimes a Rav has a prerogative, and maybe you've run across this, that if it's something like a colander or a grater or something like that, where there's a lot of holes, so then it could be made out of metal, so you could kasher it, but it's very hard to kasher because of the fact that there's so many holes. So are you sure that you cleaned it well enough? Right, again, like I said before, you have to be sure, before you kasher something, it has to be clean. There can't be pig running around, actual pieces of pig there somewhere. So if something's holy, not as in as meaning kadosh, but holy means had a lot of holes, so maybe it wasn't cleaned well. And don't forget, however you kasher something, except for one exception, a lot of times attack is what's absorbed inside. We assume that you took care of the actual physical pig that's on it. So again, sometimes a Rav could say, I'm sorry, you can't kasher it because either it's too fragile and we're scared you won't kasher it well, or B, maybe it's impractical to kasher it because of some circumstance, like there's a lot of holes, so there's a lot of nooks and crannies, things like that, where actual treif could be lurking. Okay? Everybody got it so far? Okay. So the first area that we look at is the material kasherable? That's usually an easy decision, right? If it's cheres, hasta luego, right? If it's metal, well, we can maybe do something. If it's glass, then it depends, you know. Again, sometimes it depends on the circumstance. Is it something that's crystal, heirloom, that's been in the family since before the Mayflower, you know? Or is it something like, a cheap glass that, again, you could get replaced at the 99-cent store? So that's something a Rav will consider, right? As far as, will we let you kasher, will we not? Okay? So that's the first thing a Rav will look at, is what is the material? Is it kasherable? Is it not? Okay? Now, what's the second thing? Now, the second thing is, once we have gone over the first hump, and that is, that's a material you could kasher, then the question is, how do I kasher it? How do I kasher it? I should have brought out the whiteboard, but I forgot to bring it out. And that is based upon, okay, so first question is it a material we could kasher? Then if it is a material we could kasher, so then we have the second question. How do you kasher it? The answer to how you kasher something, if it's kasherable material, is based upon one phrase. Kibolo, kach, polto. Three words. Kibolo, remember that word belia? Kibolo, the way it's absorbed, kach, so too, polto, it purges, it goes out. In other words, as we say in America, the way it goes in is the way it goes out. A friend of mine, after he got smicha from the yeshiva, one of the rabbeim pulled him over and told him, don't forget, you have to review, you have to chazu, you have to go over, review what you learned in your day over and over again, you have to make sure that you review. And he said to my friend, he said, and that's a rule that you learned in your day. My friend scratched his head and said, rule in Yoredeya? Where is it a rule in Yoredeya that you have to constantly review? I mean, at least the halachas are not of Talmud Torah, but of Basar Rochel, of a kashrus, where is that? So the Rebbe said to him, that's right there. Kibol kach bolto, the way it goes is the way it goes out. It goes in one ear, it goes out the other. Right? So the way... You don't like that, Joe?
Thermophysics?
Let's not go there. Okay. Especially since I don't know anything about it. Okay, so the way it goes in is the way it goes out. So again, we're talking about what's our main worry? Two things. Something on the surface, something we could see. Okay, that usually we could take care of. Again, we have detergents, and we have scrubbies, and we have all sorts of things to get rid of the be'en. The bigger problem is, how do I get the absorption out? Answer to that question is, the way it got in is the way it gets out. So let's go step by step, how we do that. I really should have brought the whiteboard. Okay. Maybe we'll just take a. Do you know where the. Yeah, and also, well, maybe I'll run in there with you. And we'll get. I'll get the.